Okay, so I am very excited to present tonight. I wasn't going to present tonight. I actually had somebody else who was supposed to come in, but his flight from Eretz Yisrael got messed up, and so as a result, he was landing late, and he was going to have to jump right away to his first place to be. I thought I was going to get him between two locations, and we were going to have an interesting position. But then it dawned on me that, hey, wait a second, it's International Hashtag OCD Week, and I treat a lot of OCD. I have a lot to do with OCD, and I thought, wouldn't it be great for the publication to the world at large, and especially the Orthodox Jewish community, if we spent 1 week, you know, instead of focusing on so many other topics, what if I spent a week sort of going through some of the exciting topics that come up when we deal with the issues of OCD and halacha? So I'm going to do something that we did sort of last week in terms of setting up the shiur. We'll use what I call the Rabbi Leibowitz style. But I will limit my questions for the week, and you'll decide how we'll set it up based on your interest. I'll limit my questions for the week to questions that surround the issues concerning obsessive compulsive disorder. Probably important for us to realize what obsessive compulsive disorder is. OCD, or obsessive compulsive disorder, is a condition whereby an individual it's composed of two components. A person becomes obsessed with certain cognitive thoughts that they can't shake. And those thoughts cause a person a tremendous amount of anxiety. And they often will engage in certain behaviors as a result to try to reduce the anxiety within the context. And those behaviors can be compulsive. There is a tremendous amount of doubt that comes up as a result of these obsessive thoughts. And as a result, OCD is often identified as the doubting disease. Now, there are a couple of common myths that people have about OCD, which will be important for us given the questions we're going to set on the table tonight. If you have one style of OCD, you don't have all the styles of OCD. So therefore, it's kind of important for us to realize that when somebody says, hey, you know, I have a little bit of OCD, but I don't wash my hands, right? So that doesn't mean that it's only a little bit of OCD. It's a separate subtype. There are a number of subtypes of OCD. And usually, in my experience, and experience of the secular literature, we tend to find that people's ideas tend to cluster around one or two basic ideas. And it's unique for each individual what the cluster will be, which helps a lot with the individualized treatment that comes about for different people. But therefore, the understanding that sometimes people offer somewhat, I don't believe, with any malice in mind, but still they say is, well, I'm a little OCD around Pesach. No, you're not a little OCD around Pesach, and it's not exactly a really commonly customary phrase to be offering, especially when there is a significant element of the population that does deal with such an anxiety. And, you know, you're like, hey, or somebody who said to me in front of a whole bunch of people in the community, I wish I was a little OCD about this. And I just had to stop and realize, you really don't know who you're talking to, do you? You know? It was like, I wish if I was so, a little more OCD about Hilchos Shabbos. Right. And the person was standing next to me and over the comment had to walk away because he almost burst out laughing just about the scenario at large that, you know, here's Dr. Schwartz who treats OCD. And you're kind of asking him, gee, I wish I was a little OCD. You don't wish OCD, nor do you wish cancer, nor do you wish, and not that I'm saying the two are the same, but we don't wish a disorder onto somebody else, right? Or onto ourselves. And when we do, we just quite frankly don't get it. And we really should. So a lot of what I'm going to bring up tonight are scenarios that have come up in the rabbinic literature, because there's a common misconception in the world at large that Rabbanim don't get it, that halacha has nothing to say about OCD, or that halacha breeds OCD, which is actually one of the greatest untruths in Orthodox Judaism in the realm of mental health. Halacha and OCD are very much incompatible, but you have to know what halacha is. So let's begin with a series of questions, you know, for myself. You'll decide which are the questions you feel like dealing with, and we'll see whatever time we have as to where they'll go. All right, question number one. They're on the side over there. Bunch of children get together. They come to see their rabbi. What happened? Adult children. Their father died and left them a Yerusha. Right? Their father died and left them a Yerusha. The only problem with the Yerusha was the fact that a certain individual came along and said, your father left an IOU. And he asked support, you know, somewhat flimsy support, but support for his position. Okay? In other words, there seems to be some indication that there was some loan. There is no indication that he paid off the loan. However, the children turn and say to the rabbi in the situation, our father had OCD, very clearly documented. His OCD was about the fact that he could not stand owing money. And so therefore, whenever he had a doubt that he possibly owed somebody money, he would automatically pay it off. Even if it wasn't true, if he walked into a shul in what's it called, Landau Shul? If he walked into Landau Shul, where they used to have those broken tables, Landau Shul is like a minion factory in Flatbush, right? And there are tables there. And I don't know if they still have the old ones. I think they replaced them. And the old tables are like 3-4 years old. It's 2018, so we're talking 2015. There are a couple of tables over there that probably were there from 1918. And if you look at some of the tables, like sometimes there's a scratch, there's a something. If my father davened there and he saw, you know, a scratch in the table, he would go over and pay money for a new table because he couldn't take the fact that he put a scratch in there. And there's no question that this is the way he lived his life. So there's no way, based on the paperwork he presented, that our father didn't pay off the loan. However, the Malva, the one who is owed the money, says, well, my documentation suggests otherwise. Can the fact that the father's OCD in this situation, can that serve as a basis to argue that the children should not pay off the loan, or that more or better proof has to be offered? Question number one. Question number two in rabbinic literature. There was a certain... Question number two in the rabbinic literature. Certain situation comes up in terms of treatment that was suggested. The treatment suggestion for somebody suffering from this OCD condition is the fact that he needs to take a certain medication. While he has his OCD, he's very connected to his halachic roots, and not only is he careful to ask his shilas, he's really close with his rav and asks a lot of shilas. However, he's now presenting the following shaila to his rav. I'm told that if I take medication, it is entirely possible that I may become less religious, and I'll stop asking questions to my rav. So question number two that we may choose to look at, is he permitted to take the medication or not? Okay. Question number three, and we'll move a little bit back towards some of the exciting questions that are a little bit more mainstream. Person comes up next to you, and he says to you, he is very uncomfortable because he's not sure if he pronounced Kriya Shema correctly. So he wants to know, should he say Shema again? So he decided to say Shema again. He's still not sure if he said it with the right intensity. So he says it again. He's up to like his seventh time, and he finally decided to ask a shaila. On the one hand, he thinks that the halacha is very clear. Im kivein libo yatza, im lo kivein lo yatza. And you can replace Shema with Shemon Esrei, at least the first bracha. Should the person repeat or not? That's number three, right? We're up to number three. Number four, and we're all adults, so I'll present number four. Question number four. Woman is preparing to go to the mikveh. She has a question in her mind as to whether a certain issue on her body is considered a chatzitza or not. And she's not sure. She's not sure. So the halacha identifies a concept called makpida, but she doesn't know if she's makpid or not. So the question becomes, what do we do? And as a coda to this, since we're already dealing with mikveh concerns, I'll ask a second question that we also look at. What happens if she comes home from the mikveh and she finds something and she's not sure? What should she do in that situation? Now, given the shaila for a regular person who does not suffer from OCD as opposed to a regular person who does suffer from OCD, right? The regular person who does not suffer from the OCD can turn around and decide, I'm makpid, I'm not makpid. It was there, it wasn't there. But this woman can never tell you when she's Maped, because she doesn't know. And she can never tell you with surety. Does halakha come into play to help her deal with her doubts? So those are the four major issues that I thought might make some interesting questions for us to look at when we're looking at the prism of OCD. Any requests? Pesach cleaning will wind up making the list within the same realm as all of these questions. I'm presenting these because the Pesach, first of all, because there's a wonderful book called Headlines that is in the second volume. It was written by a fantastic individual, David Lichtenstein, who runs a, now it's a podcast, once upon a time it was a radio program with the same name. And in there is a chapter on OCD and Pesach cleaning. I know this firsthand because a transcript of an interview I gave is inside that chapter. Thus, I guess technically I wrote three pages that wound up inside, but I'm not there to toot my own horn. However, you will see parallels between, depending on which questions we choose to cover, you'll see certain parallels between what we discussed then, and you'll get to hear from some of the great minds. Maybe we'll share some of their thoughts. David Cohn was interviewed, Hagona Rav Asher Weiss was interviewed, and we'll probably get a chance to hear from both of them. Any preferences? Four Shilas presented. Any preferences?
I like the first one.
You like the number one. You want to hear from the first one first? So it's funny, because Hagona Rav Herman is here tonight, and this week we were talking about this particular issue, and I happened to come across something afterwards. I sent it to him because, to me, the way we're going to look at this Shaila and the one who presented this Shaila and his approach to it had a lot of ramifications for a lot of things that we tend to discuss. So let's begin with that one. There is a halachic concept, and what I'm going to present now is going to be the position of Rav Zilberstein. Rav Zilberstein is one of the great poskim of our time. He's also a great prolific writer. We've heard from him a lot in different contexts. And there's one of his many, many svarim is a series that he wrote on Shas called Chashukei Chemed. And when he writes Chashukei Chemed, what he'll often do is he'll bring up cool shailos that have something to do with the daf. And then out of the blue, he'll present something, and now the daf becomes that much more exciting because he presents some really cool topic that, you know, before it was just about Bechoros. And you're like, there's no relation. And now all of a sudden, he is dealing with something that hits you right where it is. So if you jump ahead to source 6, we'll start with that since you're all interested in the show me the money situation. So the Gemara in Bechoros brings up an organic situation called Hol v'ishtani ishtani. Once something is changed, it's changed. So Rav Zilberstein says, well, how far does that concept go? Hol v'ishtani ishtani. How far does it go? And he raises our question, and he says, look, let's say we have a situation, right, where we have this individual who, the way he handles life is different than most people. Most people, when they have a loan, when do they pay off? At the end of the loan. I was actually, when I came across this Chashukei Chemed, I went back into just, I guess, by osmosis or just, you know, random association. So I went to my computer, checked, and did I remember to pay my business credit card this month? Right? Just point of fact, you have to remember, when do you pay off? When the loan is due, you pay off. That's the obligation. So the question Rav Zilberstein raises is, well, this guy doesn't live that way. And since it's clear he doesn't live that way, does that now all of a sudden change the nature of the halachic issue? And as a proof, he wants to cite the situation of hol v'ishtani ishtani. So he says, how far does it go? So he quotes the following shaila. He says, a guy is sitting on a boat. He's sitting on the boat, and he's in a down mood. He's sitting on a boat, he's in a down mood, he's sitting on the mast of the boat. You know, I guess not the best. What's it? The hull, the front part of the boat, you know, as the boat's going through. And he's telling everyone how sad he is, how down he is on life. And the next morning, the people look out onto the mast of the boat, the hull of the boat, and he's not there. And he's nowhere to be found on the boat. So he's gone. So here's the Shaila. Can it be assumed that he dropped into the water, drowned, right? They're nowhere near land masses, right? And that his wife, therefore, is an almana and therefore able to remarry. Or could do we have to assume that, you know, he disappeared, she's an aguna, you know, for the rest of it, until we can prove indeed that he's dead, and that's the way it is. So the argument in favor, and there is a famous position of Harav Yerushalamsky, right, who argues that, honestly, based on the situation, most of the time when people fall into the water, right, they look to save their lives. And even if somebody happens to be suicidal, in the process of dropping into the water, they start to think themselves, what was I thinking? What was I thinking? And therefore, we have to assume if they could find a means of Hatzalah, maybe they should find a means of Hatzalah. However, it could be argued, right, that says Rabbi Yerushalamsky, that in this case, that's not a necessity. Why? Because we know that he didn't change his mind. He's been talking about doing this. He said goodbye to everybody. And he's been like this for a long period in time. So he's not just the standard person, shenichnas bo ruach shtus. And he wants to argue based on this, since he has this situation, he's not in any sort of pressure. He just has a certain situation that he doesn't want to live. There's no life pressure. There's no demand pressure. He's not interested in living. So therefore, Rabbi Yerushalamsky says, maybe, you know, he offed himself. And so, therefore, we should be matir the wife.
Would it make a difference even if he didn't express any feelings of suicide? Meaning,
maybe
his own lament, the guy's gone.
Well, so if a person is down on his luck because he's, you know, whatever, we assume maybe at Harata. But here, the guy doesn't have any, there's no basis to argue.
If you're 500 miles from the nearest land, what is Harata matter?
The question is not. Maybe the question is not. The question is, would he have looked for a means to save himself if there were to be such a possibility, which would create a situation of an aguna? Or do we say that no, this guy was going to jump in and open his mouth and let the water fill him
maybe,
inside?
Maybe a well swallowed and he's alive somewhere.
Right. So there's a question of how far we have to go within the situation. So Rabbi Yerushalamsky wanted to create a basis whereby he could be matir the saguna. So if you look in the second paragraph, Hine Rabbeinu Hamar Sham, Herich Bechol Divrei Rabbi Yerushalamsky, Ubesoch Devar of Dachas Rayaso Mi Bechoros. You know, one of the arguments Rabbi Yerushalamsky wanted to make was this guy's depression is so severe that we can argue Hovish Tani Ishtani. Since he has changed the way he's living, he's totally changed. Hamar Sham says, what are you talking about? You want to say that that's like the situation in the Gemara and the Bechoros? He says, the Gemara and the Taimu, he says, I don't understand it. Taimu dehasam bebechoros, oskim bedavar hatali beteva abriya. When we deal with a situation in Bechoros, we're talking about a physical defect. And when you have a physical defect, we can argue, once the physical defect has changed the nature of the body, it changes the nature of the body. Umikivan de roim de mivne gufo nishtana misharbene mino bechaya gavna tolim ulai nishtana gam bishar dvarim v'niya saris. When we know already that there's a physical defect which would prevent something from being normal, so then we can assume perhaps that once there is a change, we can also assume ho vishtani ishtani. This is the argument of the Maharal Sham against Rabbi Yerushalamsky. He says, "V'rak pekagon da aminan hol ishtani ishtani." We can only argue that this logical, this Talmudic argument, hol ishtani ishtani, we can only argue that basis when there is a physical change. Masha inkein bimis abed. But when we're dealing with somebody who has been suicidal and committed suicide, shetalui bedaito beritzono. We're dealing with his emotional state, his logical state, and his intent. Maybe when he hit the water and he tried to kill himself, maybe he had a sudden charata and swam. And he got swept up, caught a door, caught a piece of, what do you call it, a wreckage, something along the way in the water. We say in other instances as well, we don't follow a person's original intent. People change their minds. So you can't all of a sudden make that argument. He argued how to save the woman for other arguments, but not this one argument. So based on Rabbi Yerushalamsky and the Maharsham's difference, Based on that argument, Rabbi Zilberstein says, now let's look at our case. Remember, our case is a situation where the father always pays up his debts early. So the general rule that somebody doesn't pay off his debts until the deal is done, right, shouldn't help. Listen to this logic. Should we be concerned now that perhaps this father's different and that he paid off his loan early? A person could argue that you would need to be concerned that perhaps there was payment. Right? If you look at the Ketos HaChoshim, right? The reason why we allow a person to come along and present an IOU document and be allowed to collect in general is that the standard status quo is that if I have an IOU document and it's not due yet, the general status quo is the person didn't pay it off yet. That rule is based on the way of the world. What's the way of the world? When your credit card until your credit card statement's done or your mortgage is due, you don't usually go onto your bank account and say, let me pay off in advance. It's just not the way of the world.
Does the possession of the document at any time indicate
that? The argument could be based on the fact that maybe it's not. Maybe I have a receipt. You have the document, I have the receipt. Maybe it's not real. Vim kein binyanenu, and if that's the case, in our case over here, says Rav Zilberstein, sheyesh edim, there are witnesses who argue, shemin hage ha'ish hazeh shonim, mishar min hage ha'olam. This guy's style is entirely different than the entire rest of the world. He says, if that's the case, b'dine mamanas, maybe it could be the guy always pays off long before the deal is due, and so therefore you shouldn't be able to collect from the yisomim.
Does it matter that it's his kids that are witnesses to this?
No. The kids wouldn't be the good enough witnesses. I've got other witnesses. I've got pounds and pounds of documentation. He's been evaluated. Everybody knows, right? They did a forensic assessment, and there's no question. Achladas Marsham, says Rabbi Zilberstein, you can't argue that way according to the Marsham. Ulayin lachosh lezeh ki dvarim hataluyim bedas mishtanas haachlata mizman lezman umimikra lemikra. Right, which would fit very Rabbi Herman. This is what grabbed me. Like, I'm looking at Rabbi Zilberstein's setup, so I was looking at this. I was like, great. You know why you can't argue this? Because in general, when we deal with emotional issues, according to Marsham, people change. You know what I call this? Therapy. Right? If a person can work to the point, maybe he can get around his obsessional style of insisting on paying off within that period of time. He wants to be, what's the magic word? He wants to be normal, right? Very good. So maybe we can't argue that the fact that he lives his life in a way that's different from everybody else, at least according to Marsham, in the same way that you would argue Hov Ishtani doesn't work for the case of the suicidal individual, for the case of the individual who has this OCD, right, where he insists on paying every possible loan every day before he goes to sleep, can't go to sleep owing anybody, can't go to sleep having a doubt that he owes anybody money, right? So you can't argue that. Why? Because maybe he was working on himself. Maybe he bought himself a self-help book. Maybe, this is for you, because you've quoted me, maybe he found the Center for Anxiety Relief located conveniently at 2204 Morris Avenue in beautiful Union, New Jersey, Suite 208. However, so I'm looking at this like, great, the Maharsham, at least the way Zilberstein understood it, just endorsed cognitive behavioral therapy. But here's the way of the line. This is why I sent the underlined. This is why I sent this to you. He says, "Achen yira," but Rav Zilberstein says, "Wait a minute." Shem al pi mumchem yikba shesibas han haguso hatamua novas mitoch machalas hanefesh. If it can be proven using experts, that means you go to Rabbi Herman, who is not only a religious expert and a neman, but also a secular expert in obsessive compulsive disorder. And he turns around and he says, I know this guy. I know this case. I'm looking at all the indications, forensic evaluations, I'm reading over the Yale Y-box assessment. This is the way the guy lives, right? So that means the reason why he always pays off on time, early, is not because of some sort of stylistic difference, but rather it's a machalas ha-nefesh, can go on kfitayut, she'eno shalit b'dayto lahachlit shu zakai lahachzik memono alpi klali ha-rosh yastu chazal. The guy can't live within the boundaries of halacha. Halacha says we don't have to pay until when? Until it's due. He can't live with that. Too much stress, too much doubt, and so therefore he's obsessed. And so therefore, v'savur tamid she'hamotzi mimenu tamid ha-tzedek imo. If there's a question that he owes somebody money, he pays it off. He can't live like that. Gam k'she'en lo rayos. Even if he has... if all I do is walk, forget about if I present an IAU. If I go up to me, you owe me $20. I owe you $20. You owe me $20. He's going to reach into his wallet and give you the $20. You know why? Because he can't live like that. If that's his case, v'tamid ho'achirim kod min lo, and he's always, everyone else comes before him, listen to this line, yitochein shezeu shinoi b'teva habria. Says Rav Zilberstein, this is not just a question of das and ratzon, this is so entrenched in the person that it's nature. V'gam amar sham yode bozeh l'svaras agon Rav Yerushalamsky, Damrin and Hovishtani Ishtani. If it's so entrenched within this person so far that he ain't going to change, right? So in such a situation, it's organic, and we can argue Hovishtani Ishtani. Ubefrat Khan, Shabam Ligvos Minechse Yesomim, maybe even more so over here. Why? Because the whole Shiloh comes up with not him arguing his case, but rather we're dealing with Yesomim, whereas usually the one who presents Yad Al Yona, when we're dealing with Yesomim, especially Ketanim, right, it flips around. And you want to take money from Yesomim, we're a lot more tough in that situation. Mashakos was a od yishlomo tam nosaf. Zilberstein says, by the way, I have another explanation over here. Sheulaya marasham yoda b'inyanenu, sherak sha'adam nimsa b'sharei mavis, sheosfu amayim hazei donim. Then Amrin and Sheitachin Sheiratzon Zegavar Aruach Shtusaso Ukfitiuto. Right? He says, maybe when a guy's drowning in the water, right? So then we want to say that the quest for life, the desire to live, the organic, instinctual desire to choose life over death would leave the person to overtake the anxiety of my own obsessiveness. Maybe that in that situation maybe found some sort of means to survive. And maybe that's what the Maharsham said when he disagreed with Rabbi Yerushalamsky. A person who's so entrenched with his OCD, right? And it ties him up, it chains him down. He can't open those locks on his OCD. And he can't choose to decide that even money in his own hands belong to him. Right? There must be even more basis to argue that he paid off. This is the argument Rav Zilberstein makes. So that, again, in summation, just as far as question number one is concerned, Rav Zilberstein wants to argue, and I think this is critical for us for a lot of reasons that go beyond just the tshuva, but Rav Zilberstein is arguing in this case that whereas we have this argument, ho vishtani yishtani, that once something is organically different, it's different. And Rabbi Yerushalamsky wants to use this to be matur and aguna, but the Maharsham comes along and says, that's only true in a physical change, as opposed to something that's based on cognition. Rabbi Zilberstein wants to argue something fundamentally different. He says, he offers two possibilities. That's true, assuming a person is depressed, and in a momentary lapse, is faced with the choice, maybe he changed. So one possibility is, however, as far as OCD is concerned, OCD that's really hardcore OCD is so fundamentally changing. It's just the same thing as a physical difference in the person. And so therefore, it would change the nature of the applicability of the general halacha as it is applied to the masses. And two, even if you don't want to argue that, don't bring me a proof from something that is limited to a situation of life versus, you know, emotional disorder, because there's an instinctual desire for life. However, once it's not exactly life, that final moment, then the person will choose disorder over comfort, over level, because they feel that that's the nature of the disorder. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking to myself, first time I read it, I'm thinking to myself, this is great, you just supported cognitive behavioral therapy. And then he turns around and says, yeah, but that's not the way it really works in real life. Right? However, that's not so. And I realized afterwards that no, I'm just being too tough on myself. Because really, what's Rav Zilberstein saying? Of course a person can change. But the person has to be able to change. He has to really work on it. He has to stick to it to get back to teva of being within the same nature. Ho vishtani yishtani means if the person is this far stuck, not if this person is stuck and somehow gets out of the situation. Where he is right now, ho vishtani yishtani. And this is the first principle that I wanted to bring about from the halacha, to realize that sometimes the argument of organicity of OCD can make a difference, at least as far as Rabbi Zilberstein is concerned, at least as far as Yisomim, collecting from Yisomim is concerned, there is a recognition of the role of OCD in the modern poskim.
In this case, though, doesn't the fact that he took the loan prove that he got over his OCD of debt?
No.
The definition of a loan is I borrow money and I pay it back.
So I'm driving on the road today, right? And I get a call. It happens to be a telemarketing call, but I get a call. Right? We're shutting your cell phone account, which is kind of funny, because you're shutting my cell phone account from my cell phone. So, real kasha. Right? You know, we're setting you shut for non-payment. If you want to pay now, press 1. If you want to be put on the do not call list, right? Press 2. Right? So, I had a good chuckle over that. But let's say I'm in that situation, and it's for real. Right? Let's say I have two different people. I have the collectors calling, and I bump into you. And, you know, being a very successful dentist, I ask you, can you lend me $5,000? And being the generous guy that you are, you're like, hey, this is easy. Why? Because for sure, he's going to pay me back. Now then, I'm not going to have to chase after him because he pays me back. I have to, as long as I say to him, you owe me $5,000, he's going to give me $5,000. So you're like, this is the easiest guy to lend money to, right? So your proof is not anything. You figured it's just till I get to the bank. Remember, let's assume Israel for a minute. When are banks open? They're open from 9 to 9.03, and then there's Aruchat Eser overtime, and then they're open from like 11 to 11.07, and then there's Aruchat Zahraim until 4, and then the bank's open for the last 8 minutes, and if you happen to be in there in the exact right minute in time. But sometimes other people need to collect, right? So if that's the case, what do I do? And if I have, so your proof doesn't, your assumption doesn't hold water, because my style might be to borrow from you right now, but for afterwards. I had one situation once here on the show, right? And Marvin thought I was crazy. Guy shows up and he wants to collect for a particular thing. I didn't have cash on me. I asked to borrow money from Marvin. I never do that. But the guy was running somewhere. So I borrowed a couple of dollars from Marvin, went to the bank, took out the cash, came back, brought it to Marvin. The whole length of the loan was 25 minutes. Marvin says to me, like, I could have waited till tomorrow. Okay, you know what? That's the way things go. You wait till tomorrow till you pay somebody back. It could be a little while. So I knew what I was doing, and I wanted the mitzvah today, not tomorrow.
In this particular case, as a financial case, why does it means also play a role? Meaning if he borrowed $500, right, and because his personality is to immediately pay back, we have to assume if he makes $50,000 a year, he had the means to pay back. Whereas if he borrowed $500,000,
because he's not here to argue,
then he makes $50,000. Then even if his impulsiveness is to pay back immediately, how is he paying back? It's a fair question,
but let's assume because I don't know the background that far into the background of the Shaila, right? Let's assume he has the means. After all, the Yisomim are being hid from the money from the estate. Oh, so you want to argue? Yeah, but maybe just because I have $50,000 and I borrowed $5,000 from Yossi doesn't mean I owe Yossi $5,000. Or that I paid Yossi
$5,000.
No, I don't know. It depends on, depending on what the interest rates are versus the market.
Versus if the loan was 10 times what he makes in a year.
Oh, so you're right. So you're right. If the Shiloh was, I hear what you're saying. You're right. If it would be totally impossible.
Not possible.
You know, if the guy the guy's living on a call salary and he always pays off his loans on time and you're walking up and arguing, yeah, he borrowed $500,000. Right? That better be one really good kollel, right? And by the way, when it is, we both want to know about it because we'd like to take the bechina to get in. I think we all want to take the bechina to get in, right? But, you know, you're right. I don't know in that case if the same argument would even like, get off the ground or if we'd all be laughing at the guy. That the Malva is coming to the Yisum. I don't know. So this is point number one, or idea number one. Does anyone want to get to another one? We have a little more time. So we answered the question about show me the money. So we still have on tap the guy who's afraid that he's going to lose his Yiddishkeit. Can he be treated? The issue of Kriya Shema, of cleanliness, and the issue of what do I do with the, I don't know if I'm makpid or not.
I actually once saw someone doing this Kriya Shema thing. I saw it with my, and he must have said it like 10 times, and my heart just broke for him because, I mean, what he must have been. So I am curious just because.
Okay. Anybody else have any opposition to going to that one next? So this is probably one of the more common situations. Let's go back to three source numbers. We'll do the threes. So first of all, let's start at the beginning. The Shulchan Aruch paskins in Hilchos Kriya Shema, Yikra Kriya Shema b'Kavana. You have a responsibility to say Kriya Shema with Kavana. Of course, what's the ever popular pro question? What's Kavana? Right? What's Kavana? Right? So you have to say Kriya Shema with Kavana, with Ema. What's Ema?
Fear.
B'yira. Awe. B'reses. Shivering. Right? Vizeya, which is often understood as? Right. So you got OCD. It's a perfect recipe. I got to say it with all of these emotions. Right? Whoa. Right? And if you don't, so then in Hilchos Tefillah we have a similar concept. Hamispalel, when a person davens, tzarech she'echaven b'chol ha'brachos. Right? You have to have kavana for all brachos, which basically means, I can't speak for the rest of you, but I'm in big trouble. Right? Thank God I'm an Ashkenazi. No, it doesn't help, because the Rama, we'll take a look. Right? V'im eino yochol l'chaven b'kulam, if you can't have the proper kavana in all of them, so l'vachos, Yechavin ba'avos. At least you should have kavana for that first bracha, right? At least, if you can't play the entire game, right? At least come out when you're in, right? And give it your all, right? Vimlo kivein ba'avos. What happens if you didn't have kavana at the beginning of Shmon Esrei in that first bracha? So alpha we should keep him b'chol hashar, even though you had kavana with the rest of the Shmon Esrei. Yasav yispalo, which is what you observed. You should go back and daven again. Uh-oh. So when we're done, of course, we can analyze whether we all need to repeat Mariv. Can't speak for the rest of you, but just if that's the case, we got to make sure we finish in time for the Yeshiva Minyan. Mm-hmm. The Ramah pipes up, he says, V'ha'idna in chosen b'sriel chisaron kavana. Right? Today, we don't go back for a lack of kavana. Sha'ap v'chazor karofu shalo yichavin. Like, what do you think is going to happen the second time? Right? You're thinking it, so you go the third time, right? Im kein lama yachzor. So if that's okay, what are you going back for? What are you hoping to get out of the situation? Like, what do you think is going to happen? So what are we supposed to do? So first of all, I live in the world, right? So I thank God I bump into a lot of people who are interested in piety, right? So they go to Yeshiva, or they go to Beis Yaakov, or they go to a Berea or a JC, or they daven in the various JC Batei Knessios. And they love to daven. And they really don't want to do things b'di'evit. We live in a very wonderful society. We're trained to try to do the mitzvahs the right way. After all, think about it. If we're that makpid, if we're going to eat fleishes, we're going to go eat fleishes the best way possible. If you're going to make Shabbos food, you're going to make Shabbos food the best way. So why not do this the best way possible? Right? So we got people that get the idea. Let's do it right. So if the Mechaber says one thing, and the Rama says, okay, but today not. So first of all, what if I'm a Sephardi? Right? And what if I learned in Brisk, where in Brisk, they study the Rambam, and the Rambam was a Sephardi. So maybe, like, there I'm always trying to handle it for Schwartz, because Schwartz is, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, he's a weak guy. He's so busy, he's got other things on his mind. But for the, you know, for the holy people, maybe they do need to come back. What should one do? So this leads a lot of people to have a lot of problems. Somebody writes to Moshe Feinstein, and he says, you know, yeah, you know, he has other problems. Or somebody was recently talking to me about it. He said, well, I'll get to the later question in a second. I can take this idea even one step further. So Moshe says, you know, he was asked to show how to deal with this. And he writes, V'kavanasa d'lechein yatza b'di'eved, k'shehir b'dvarim b'yama shalo b'shasha omar pasuk rishon shebekriya shema o'berchas avas d'tvila, avak shalo niskam b'shasa amir b'yemes lo yatz midina b'tzarach l'asa b'kriya shema b'tvila b'lo niskam b'avas gamkin tzarach l'asa min adin. The writer who writes her, Moshe, says he was of the opinion that, like, really, mi'ikar adin, like, the real way to do these two areas is that you really should go back and repeat. Aval idnei chozim shulchisaron kavana, kidakasav shamar amah, zeo pirish kavanas ha-mishnah berurah b'biyar halacha v'gam eich shesover l'maiseh. So the person who writes her, Moshe, says, I was reading mishnah berurah, I was reading the biyar halacha, and I'm convinced that the mishnah berurah and the biyar halacha are telling me that, really, the mechaber is right. So what should I do? So Ramosha goes, no offense, I think you're reading the Mishnah Berurah wrong. Nanya estaiti lo mistaber klal, period. Lomar shehafsaka behiru haba hafsaka. The idea that I made a hefsek because I stopped to think about, you know, orange juice, or, whoops, I better make sure to sign that note, or how do you get into Google Classroom, right? So, not that I'm saying this were everyone else's thoughts, but sometimes, you know, you're davening for the chinuch of your children, and you just spend time this week, and you learned that, you know, you're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're thinking, oh, yeah, whoops, Google Classroom, right? You know, so then all of a sudden, Ramosha says, the fact that you're thinking about something is not a, you know, a hafsaka, a b'emsa pasuk rishon, even if it's in the first pasuk. U'b'emsa birchus avos, kivan shahira, amra tevos b'kavana. You had a thought. So you had a thought. But you said the words. With Kavana, the Kiddush Gadol, Kazeh, Kokach, Yosem, Ikvisha, Yasavar, Tchila, Havale, Lefarish. So Ramosha comes along and says, he doesn't get it at all. He says, the fact that you had, he jumps a little further down, he says, Aval Hirhurim, B'machshava, B'alma, just having plain old thoughts, simple machshavos, Kishalo, Amar, Klal, he didn't say anything at all. Ain't but then Havsaka, that's called a Havsaid. Certainly can go further with that. Ela im shal kedei ligmoras kula shadino shechozer larosh. If you really got so fouled up that you sat there for a long time, that you had enough time to get through the entirety, then maybe you should go back to the beginning. So Ramosha's tshuva is great on a practical Ramosha halacha level, except for one case. You know which case it's not a good case for? When you have OCD. You know why? Because now watch what the OCD person does. Right? Well, how long? Oh, gosh, I stopped. Great. Well, oh, good. Ramosha says, if you didn't stop long enough to, right? Wait, how long did I stop? Wait, what about now? Wait. Let me just say it all over again. Wait, I'm going to start over again. Wait, am I supposed to start over again? The Rama says not to start over again. What am I going to do? So, again, the bare bones of Ramosha is, I don't think this is a problem. But before Ramosha, this volume of Igros Moshe hit the market, which came out posthumously, there was a great sefer that came out. It was written by a psychiatrist who used to live in Muncie, now lives in Eretz Yisrael, right, Rabbi Dr. Greenwald. And in it, in the front part of the sefer, he gathers a number of the letters of the stipler, Rabbi Soyal Kanievsky. And I have to tell you, when you're dealing with the stipler, it's amazing. I always say the stipler is my favorite modern Orthodox rabbi for OCD. And everyone who says that gets really angry at me. How dare you call modern Orthodox? But if you know my definition of modern Orthodox, it means a posek, right? Because after all, a posek is the real modern Orthodox. He's the guy who takes modern issues of the day, and what does he do? He helps to make sure that Torah helps us understand them. All this other stuff is nonsense, just because a bunch of guys got together and made up a new definition. So the first time I pointed this out, to the first lecture I gave, I was speaking to a bunch of Hasidic mental health workers, and I said, I want to quote a non-Orthodox posse. They bristled. And then the next slide was a picture of the stipler. Modern Times. Listen to the stipler. He said, I told the guy, you know what? Just daven out of a siddur. I told the guy, no repeating. No repeating. Even if he's convinced, I for sure didn't daven right. Or he left out letters. He says, the fact is, he doesn't have to go back. And I'll tell you a little secret. He, in other letters, and Rabbi Herman and I have seen this together many times, right? The stifler also builds off the idea that who knows what Kavan is anyway. I mean, even the Mishnah Berurah talks about this in other places. Look, this is probably the most famous Reb Chaim Brisker, says, what's real Kavana today? What's real Kavana? You understand standing before God, which, by the way, we also could use a little bit more work on, but that's not for now. That's not tonight's topic, right? But the Pirush HaMilos, or beyond, you know, the Tziruf HaOsios and the Kabbalistic. Look, these are not things we go over. So the Steibler goes along and he says, look, you understand? You said Kriya Shema? Yeah. Keep going. Right? And don't go back. And by the way, he says, there's only one key critical factor. Don't bother to explain why to somebody who's stuck in the situation. You know why? Look what happened with Reb Moshe. Right? He says, and when I teach rabbis at YU, this is the first thing I teach them. Don't give explanations. Paskin the Shaila. There's no chashash d'oraisa. How do you know? I said so. You're modeling something very important for somebody who's suffering from this condition. I said so. I can't explain it. You're not allowed to go back. And by the way, Rav Asher says the same thing in Shas Tshuvas Menchas Asher, and if you go back to that episode, which was summarized, it's on. I got a free copy. It's up on the shul bookshelves from Rav David Lichtenstein. So if you want to borrow, it's called Headlines, Volume 2. You can read in there also the episode. You can hear Rav Asher say, no. You go out of your way, and you paskin, you give a simple answer, you don't repeat. You go straight, and that's it. And that's the way you proceed. So as far as we're concerned in terms of the Kriya Shema, and by the way, we've used this in other instances where we've talked about similar things with another parallel case, which happens quite a bit. Person's concerned about it, whether he was clean enough for davening. Am I clean enough? Because, you know, if you're standing around and you're not sure 100% that you're... I've had people bleeding. They've cleaned themselves so hard, they've wiped themselves so hard, so you shouldn't have it. They've been bleeding. This is the stipler. It's crazy. This is the source number, what is it, 2, I guess. Right? 2A. Right? The stipler also turns around. He says, you know, we're not supposed to go ahead and do what we're supposed to do. You tell him, you turn around, and you tell them, we don't go crazy over the situation. You do this, it's the six square rule. Which is what? The stipler says, did you use six squares? Yes. We often use a lot more than six squares when we go to the bathroom. Use six squares? Yes, that's enough. How do you know? I had one guy come to me and say, six squares, I barely got started. The stipler said six squares. Okay? He says, ugh, you don't know anything, you're just modern. Yeah, I know, but so is the stipler. So I'm pretty... You're firmer than the stipler? And then I'll get a call from his Rebbe. I said, are you sure the stipler said it? I'll give him the chapter and verse. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Sometimes when you're dealing with questions, you got to be able to realize where the questions are coming from. And so as far as the second question is concerned, our goal in treating the situation is helping the person understand the halacha, the application of the halacha, the application of the halacha to the individual. By the way, the stipler's eitz over here, the stipler's advice over here is also critical. And what's that? I'm not explaining it to you. Why? Because if I explain it to you, what's the next thing you're going to do? Well, I won't mention the posek, but a major posek in today's times, actually said, you know, I can't explain it, but just so you, because I don't need to add on to what the Stipler said, but just so you understand, you know, this is where you're up to in life. So the guy writes back to him, and he says, fine, but I'm really from, like, maybe you didn't get it, like, you're only telling me that because you think I have a problem, so you have to be maple on me, but I'm a very, you know, pious person. No, that's not what the Stipler said to do. And it's not my job to do that. And so you will be shocked at the number of poskim cross the beltway of orthodoxy, from the Satmar and Baba Vadayanim to some of the pulpit rabbis that you may know, cross the board, who all understand that in these situations, you paskin, you don't explain, and you go on. Very different from the way poskim like to explain things in other scenarios. Right? How many times have we asked the Shalom? We talked it out. Let's take a look at the shir tonight. Right? The whole shir tonight. We are willing to explain. We talk. We this. Everyone likes to talk out halacha. But when you're dealing with somebody and you're choshesh OCD, what do? Answer. Why? Because I said so. Now, like the plaque, you made me your posek. I can tell you without a doubt it works. I know I'm right. You know how I know? Stipler said so. Okay? Can't get bigger than this diaper. Should we stop here? Should we go do one more? I'll do the last one. I'll do the second one. The one about the tshuva, right? The one with the medication. So this one I thought was funny. Right? Why? Because I didn't understand where it came from. Let's go over the question again. Shaila came into the Rav. In this case it was, again, Rav Zilberstein. He writes Rav Zilberstein. He says, I have this Baal Bas who is very dedicated to me. And he's dedicated to Torah and mitzvahs. Okay? Very, very dedicated to me and to Torah and mitzvahs. And he brings, every time he has a shaila to me, he brings the shaila to me. In fact, he comes to me quite a bit. Okay? In fact, he comes to me more than quite a bit. And by the way, he suffers from OCD. Says the writer to Rav Zilberstein, he says, just so you know, he came to me recently and he said he has a potential medicinal method. I imagine it's a psychiatric medication, that if he takes the psychiatric medication, it will cure his OCD, right? But he may not be firm afterwards. Can he take the medication? So if you look over my right shoulder, you'll notice that Rabbi Herman's eyebrows are furrowing. Because what's going through his head right now is, I have no idea what this medication is. And I think I know most of the medications, he's thinking to himself. I've never come across this one before. Right? So now you're just 2 days after me, because I saw this 2 days ago and I was like, wow, this is really funny. Before I get into the technicalities here, because you have to listen to it, post it carefully. What do you say if that were to be the case? What would people say? Treat the OCD or don't treat the OCD?
What does it mean you want to be from?
Huh? He's not gonna be firm anymore.
What does that mean?
It means that he's not gonna be shomer Torah mitzvahs. He can't guarantee he'll be shomer Torah mitzvahs. How about we leave that? I'll put it that way. I think that's more the way Rav Zilberstein was presented with the Shaila. By the way, I think that makes a very major difference the way I set it up just now. So what do people say? You run the risk or you don't run the risk?
You give it to the OCD, let him choose to do the right thing.
But the guy's telling you that one of the risks is that he may not be from anymore.
How does he know?
It's one of the side effects. You probably ask the doctors. By the way, I think that's the answer to our question. I'm convinced that this is the answer to our question. He asked the doctor, any side effects? He said, I don't know. He says, well, what happens if I do this and I get well, and now all of a sudden I won't be observant. And the doctor says, well, I can't do anything about that. Do you want to continue to, you know, constantly be in the bathroom wiping yourself with 6 rolls of toilet paper instead of 6 squares, and instead of praying to your Lord? I can't answer that question. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just a doctor. Now what do you say? And bring me a proof, if you can. Well, what do you say first? Let's go with that. What do people say? Medicate or don't medicate? Medicate, why?
You have to take care of yourself.
Yeah, but what's a life if it's not a life of Torah?
We don't know.
That's not guaranteed.
Huh?
It's not about that.
Okay, so...
He's thinking theoretically, who knows what his freedom is going to be after he's well.
Okay,
and
so
all the shilas are coming from his OCD. They're not coming from him.
So I want you to know, Chana, I'm so impressed with that, because what you just did right now, so off the top of your head, so smooth, bothered Rabbi Herman for a grand total of 3 minutes and me for a full half an hour. Right? And I'm thinking to myself, and you just like nailed it. So Rizavishin deals with the answers using the following example. Famous Gemara in Brachos and other places, right? Chizkiyahu HaMelech is deathly ill. Right? What happens to him? Why is he deathly ill? So Yishayahu HaNavi is dispatched to go explain to him why he's deathly ill. So Yishayahu says, you weren't Osek in Priya Virivya. God says, if you're not going to be Osek in Priya Virivya, I'm going to have to take care of you. So Chizkiyahu says, no offense, Yishayahu, I know a little something about Nevuah and stuff. And I also saw in Nevuah that whatever the name of the kid is that I'm going to have is going to be a Rasha Marusha Chote Umachti. You know what I said to myself? I ain't bringing a kid into the world like that. So Yishayahu says, right, and that's why you're on your deathbed and you're going to die. So Chizkiyahu HaMelech turns around and he thinks about it and he says, well, maybe we should do something about this. Maybe if I marry your daughter, maybe there would be a schus, a hatzala purta, maybe something will come out of it between your schus and my schus, and so it is. But let me ask you a question. Why is that such a problem? Right? Why is God, I mean, after all, Chizkiyahu is right. Like, you're bringing a person into this world, right? No. What did Yishayahu tell him? Bahadi kashi derachmana lamali. Why are you getting involved in God's issues of the future? What's your job in this world? Your job is to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks you to do. Right? And in these situations, your job is to go ahead and get the refuah. And if that's the case, then what are you supposed to do in paralleling that over here? So forget about my argument before that you may not be from in the future. Right? If right now you have a responsibility to get well so you can live and survive, right now you should get well and survive. Listen to what he says over here. If you look at the second paragraph of Source 7, he says, and this is also Chashuki Chemed and Yevamos. These are great. These are awesome. I'm sorry. You just have to look at the bottom paragraph. At the top, he brings down the Shaila. I just gave you the Shaila. He says, Vein Zedom El Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He says, our Shaila, he thinks, for sure you medicate. It's not similar to the Chizkiyahu Shaila. Shamalo anabi sha'alav laseisi shavalo l'ischashe b'zeh she'olid ben rasha b'shem t'chizkiyahu chai b'mitzvah puravu. Maybe you could argue that what Chizkiyahu had a mitzvah puravu. V'zoi mitzvah she'ein ba'dofi. Ela shemikoach mitzvah zu yisgalgal amatzav she'yivalei bein she'anu yodim alpi nevuah she'ya rasha. So b'zeh anu omrim b'hadi kavshad rechman olam alach. In the case of Chizkiyahu, right? You have a mitzvah. What's your mitzvah? Purvu. So what are you supposed to do? Purvu. Let the rest fall, the chips fall. Aval, turning to the next side, he says, etam haripui asur. He says, our problem is, maybe you can argue that the main part of our healing process is forbidden. You may get rid of the physical problem. Right? If the medication makes you leave the Torah, maybe that's a problem. Got to a situation where he disagreed with the Chachamim, and they kicked him out of yeshiva, they excommunicated him, etc. And when it came time for, when he was on his deathbed, he told his son, by the way, you are not supposed to follow me on this, you're supposed to go ahead and follow the Chachamim. So he says, wait a minute, if you're going to tell me this, then why don't you do the same thing? He says, I can't, because I believe this is the Mesorah that I have from my Rebbeim. But you don't have that Mesorah, so therefore you're supposed to follow the party line. So he says, I understand. How could you? He says, I'd rather be a shaita all the days of my life that they're all making fun of me, calling me names, and not be a rasha 1 hour in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So maybe that's the same thing over here. Better you should be a shaita. Better you should be stuck with this intense OCD and religious. However, it says, I'm still sitting here. I get to this point in the Shuvah. I'm like, you're starting to get upset. You're furrowing your eyebrows. I was like, no! I almost picked up the phone and called you. Like, this is crazy. What's this medicine? Why don't we know about it? Listen to the next line, though. This is the brilliance of the poskim. Kol devarenu amurim ba'ofen sheborur lanu shal yedei hari poyechta. All this argument that perhaps you shouldn't take the medication because you're going to become a shota. I'm sorry, that you're going to become a rasha instead of a shota. All that's assuming that there's a direct cause and effect. But every single one of you in this room, every single one of you, from the expert and the rav, all the way through to the rest of you who may have never heard of such a medication before, you all picked up on the same thing. And what's that? You all picked up on the fact that it's a shema. Very good. Avam adavar rak begeder shal chashash. If the question is only one of chashash, that it's a possibility, so yesh l'shtadel l'dog l'kach shalo yetzei l'chet v'lo yifrok o v'gam l'raposo. What should we do? What do we do? Let's work with him, right? But we can also heal him and also work with him. So I'm sitting there, I finished the chew, and I'm saying, he says he can go. In fact, he goes a little further. He says, same Shaila came to Rav Aaron Leib Shteinman, and Rav Shteinman possibly should take the medicine, right? And I'm saying, what's he talking about? What's he talking about? So I realize, wait a second. You know what he's talking about? The exact thing we mentioned before. He goes to the doctor. And he says to the doctor, are there any risks in taking this medication? And of course, the doctor knows what's the absolute worst thing to do for an OCD patient? Reassurance. It's the big aveira. Right? Because, right? As we explained before, we call OCD the doubting disorder. And we try very hard to help the person learn to deal with the doubt. So if I tell you, no, there's no problem with taking this medication, I'm not really helping you now, am I? You, after all, why do you think you're spending all this time with your rabbi? Because you want your rabbi to do what? Answer the question till the point that you get rid of your doubt. You don't have shilas for the rabbi. I actually had a case like this once. A guy comes into my office. Now, I'm not his posik. I was his therapist. He comes in with one of those yellow legal pads. Right? And he opens it up. Because I limited his ability to go to his rabbi. It was the summertime. And I limited his ability to go to his rabbi in the mountains to ask his shilas. I only allowed to have one rabbi. To once a week for 20 minutes. So he prepared all week. He filled the entire pad with questions. How many sheets in the pad? How many lines on the pad? Right? Think about it. And he had filled the entire thing. And he was getting ready. As soon as he left my office, he was going to go up to the mountains, right? It's the big day. So I said to him, okay, you know you're only getting 20 minutes. He says, yeah. I said, you know, we agreed with the Rev that at 20 minutes, he says, I got to go. Bye. And he's not allowed to answer anything. You have any, now cross off all the questions that are repetitive, that you don't want to waste. And he sat in my room for the next 44 minutes, because this came up at the beginning of the session. By the time he was done, he had maybe one question. And by the time he made it up to the mountains, he shook his rav's hand and said, see you next week, same time. Walked away. Right? The doubt is the awful situation. Once you can get around the situation, being able to handle the doubt, and it's always great. You always present your best stories because that way you come out sounding okay. The tough ones you don't always present. Right? But the doubt is the thing that causes the crisis for the person. So I think the person who presented the shiloh was the patient himself to his rav. And the rav freaked out because the rav didn't know anything about a medication. It's a great shiloh. However, I don't think the medication is true. And Rav Zilberstein, who is a brilliant posig, and also, by the way, a posig to doctors on top of being a posig to the rest of the world, did enough research for him to realize what? That the shiloh is skewed. Right? And that's why he gave the answer that he did. Are you dealing with a vadai? Are you sure that what's going to come out of this situation is the person's going to be a chote? It's a different story. If you're sure the person's going to be a chote, got to put him on the side. But how clearly, in an OCD case, can we find that medication? P.S. The thing that was bothering Rabbi Herman was bothering me, was bothering Rav Zilberstein. Which is, if such a medication exists, nobody seems to know about it, right? The goal of medication when we treat OCD or any other anxiety disorder is what? To reduce the anxiety. It doesn't take away the obsessions. And so therefore, it can't take away the Yiddishkeit. Because choosing not to be observant is a, I just gave it away from you, it's a choice. And so the job in this situation of the environment and the individual is to work with the individual so he shouldn't have to give up his choice in order for him to be able to function. And indeed, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this topic tonight. To help us all understand that OCD and halacha are not one and of the same. One doesn't cause the other. In fact, ignorance, more often than not, guides the OCD more than halakhic observance does. Because what winds up happening is the person gets so nervous, they tend to run on their own nerves, as opposed to the way the real poskim understand the halacha, which is to run in the right direction. We didn't get to everything, but I'm sure we'll have old chazon lamoed, but Be'ezras Hashem will have the opportunity to share many other topics together, and I thank you all very much.